When we think about serving God, we often think about the big things, the world-changing events. But what if serving God is actually much simpler? What if it's getting a cup of coffee in the morning, choosing our clothes, or getting our children dressed for school? What if serving God is about getting ourselves up and heading to work, having a nice dinner with our family, walking the dog on occasion, brushing our teeth every day, and yes, going to bed at a decent hour? What if serving God was actually remarkably ordinary? Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for that very nice presentation. I'm required by the elders to do that every year. No, I appreciate all the thoughts and everything that's come my way over the last couple of weeks. Thank you. Now, so this week, Jen and I were out shopping, and we noticed a game at Walmart that we thought Macon would love. We have been playing Uno with him for quite some time. He likes it. He gets really excited, and every time he gets to play a wild card or a reverse or a draw two, he gets so excited to play that on either mom or dad. It depends on which one he likes better that day, who he plays it on. And every time he uses one, he calls it his dirty tricks. And he'll tell you exactly how many dirty tricks he has in his hand before the game ever begins, because he has no ability to keep it a secret, because he's five. So we found a version of Uno at the store called Uno All Wilds. Every card is a dirty trick. There are no colors, there are no numbers, everything is wild. Now, just a plain wild, therefore, becomes basically meaningless because it doesn't do anything, but you also have your reverses and your draw twos and your draw fours. There's one where you get to target who you want to draw to instead of the next person after you. And then the best one of all is a card in which you can change hands with another player the moment you lay it down. So here's how it goes. Your five-year-old is all excited to play. He's doing great. He's throwing down cards on mom and dad, winning, doing awesome. He gets down to Uno. And then dad plays a card and says, "I'd like your Uno, son." Then he gets like 15 cards and I have one. And then for some reason he gets mad at me. It's a lot of fun. It does kind of frustrate our son a little bit, so we had to kind of ban the game for a little while. but it's called Uno All Wilds. Look at it. Look for it at your local store. and then come over and play with us. We started a series a couple weeks ago. We're calling it Everyday Action, and it's focusing on the idea that so much of the time, we want to talk about following God to the ends of the world. We want to talk about these big ideas and these big dreams and how we're going to start this ministry or go to this country and be a missionary. And all those things are so great and so good, and I'm glad we talked them up. But at the same time, one of the things we often don't talk about enough in church is how the way we honor God is really, as much as anything, tied to what we do every day. In some ways, following God can almost be mundane. It means that every part of our life, from the most simple, basic things, God has jurisdiction over. And we can do it either in a way that honors Him or a way that doesn't. And our key verse through this whole series comes out of 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 31, and it says this: "So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God." So no matter what it is we're doing in life, how do we do it in a way that honors God? Last week we chose to talk about work. Whether it is officially a job you get paid for or it's just what you do, everyone should have something that they do or are responsible for. Even in the Garden of Eden before the fall, what did Adam do? He took care of the garden. Work is part of our dignity. It's something that we do, and we can either complain about it or do it in a poor way, or we can see it as part of our DNA and use it as an opportunity to practice the virtues that God has given us, or even to spread the gospel and influence the world in a Christian way through our very everyday activities. And so, yes, sometimes the mundane are the best opportunities that we have to worship God. And today's sermon, what I want to kind of zero in on, if you will, is I'm kind of calling this relationship status unknown. Because I want to talk about the areas of things like dating and singlehood and marriage. Because everyone in our lives is in some manner of that going on. Whether you're divorced, whether you are a widow or a widower, or you're young and they haven't even started dating yet. We're all looking in that area of relationship status, and we want to figure out how, in doing that, we can honor God. Because this is part of everyday life. This is what humans do. So how do we do everyday life for Him? And I want to go to a verse that I think is going to kind of lay out a good starting point for this conversation, which is admittedly a rather large conversation. But I want to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 17. In this section of Scripture, Paul is taking on some difficult subjects. In fact, there's some controversial things in here, but he's talking about ideas like marriage and not being married and all of these things. And in chapter 7, verse 17, he sort of summarizes it in a very effective way. He says this, "Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer, and hear this, in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them. Just as God has called them, this is the rule I lay down in all of the churches." Everyone should live for God in the situation in which they are called. And that is the rule I lay down in all the churches. Now, that may not sound like much. Maybe it doesn't sound like a whole lot. But this is, I think, a key to getting into this a little bit deeper. One of the things I've noticed as a minister, as someone who counsels people, and just general observations of a human being, I've noticed that there's a large chunk of the poor decisions that people make in life come from this area of life, relationship status. Single, married, divorced, whatever it is, a lot of the poor decisions we make come from rushing from one status to another, trying to change our circumstances instead of simply living within our circumstances and honoring God with it. You see, I've heard people talk about this section of Scripture where Paul is, and he's talking to people about marriage and encouraging them to stay, you know, if you're unmarried, stay unmarried or this or that. And one of the historical things that I've heard preached many times is that this was partly a misunderstanding of Paul. Have you heard this? The idea is that Paul and many of the first century Christians believed, it seems, that Jesus was going to return in their lifetime. Have you heard that before? And you can read some parts of the letters that certainly sound like that. And so the argument typically goes that Paul was telling them that as you stay single, that is because he thinks the world's going to end. There's no need to go ahead and continue changing status. And it's a good way of kind of dismissing it a little bit. But what I'm going to push back today is, what if it's more than that? What if this isn't just about Paul misunderstanding? What if this is about realizing that sometimes our rush to go from one status to another doesn't help us along in life? And in fact, wherever we are, God can use us and we can honor Him, whether we are married or not, whether we are widowed or not, whether we are dating or not, in whatever circumstance, we are to serve Him in the assignment He's given us. Maybe that is the lesson we need to hear. Like I said, I have noticed a lot of people make mistakes in this area in life. And I can go through a lot of different examples, but I'll give you a couple. These are not specific. You don't have to squirm in your seats, okay? A woman is married to a man, but she's getting now the first glimpse of life outside the home. And suddenly she's ready to move on and chase it all and eager to change her status to unmarried so that she can go out and explore everything the world has to offer. Does that happen? A man, desperately lonely after having gone through a divorce, finds a woman, finally, who is willing to date him. Amen. In so doing, he ignores every red flag possible and runs himself right into a broken home, an empty bank account, and major depression, because he was too eager to change his status. A young couple, maybe some teenagers who are discovering dating all of a sudden, and they have some alone time, they discover bodily responses and things, and they suddenly jump headlong into the next step, and then go on someday to regret that decision so early. There's something about this area of life in which there are deep-seated desires that bubble up under the surface of our very being, so much so that we don't even fully understand or account for those desires underneath of us. And because they are there, and because they seem good and are good to some degree, we tend to rush and make bad decisions in a kind of fever dream. And because of that, so many of us make mistakes. And if you've made a mistake in life, that's okay. I just want to talk about the necessity of being a Christian right where you are instead of rushing to the next step. Does that make sense? We are to live as Christian in your circumstances. Don't be eager to leave it behind. Slow down. Because these are the areas in which most of the mistakes in life, many of the mistakes in life, are actually made. So with this in mind, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it to the glory of God. And what was our second verse? There it is. Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever circumstance the Lord has assigned to them. This is the rule I lay down in every church. Let's think in these lines, and I'm going to do my best to address a few different perspectives. Again, this is relationship status unknown, and truth be told, I don't know each of you, and I can't give a sermon to each of you individually, so I'm going to do my best to break down some categories. We're going to start with everyone's favorite, dating. Not my favorite, because for me it was a big nervous anxiety attack. But for many people, it is their favorite, right? Dating. There's a lot to be said here. But one of the things that I want to say to the situation of dating and how to be a Christian within that circumstance is that I think that we should be intentional. I think that we should be Christian. And I think we should be slow. And I'm going to kind of break that down a little bit. Why do I say dating couples should be intentional? I mean, why are you doing this? Why are you going on a date? Can you see the person you're dating really being with them long term? Are you moving in the direction of marriage? Or is this somehow something that you're not really putting much thought into? And I'm not saying that sometimes those early relationships are mostly just fun and figuring out, you know, who you like, what you like. I get all that. But at some point, there should be a seriousness to our relationships. We should be intentional about them. And one of the things that I'm sorry I have to mention or harp on a touch is I want to take you to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. There's a verse here that often comes up in this area of dating that I feel like I ought to at least mention. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. You've heard this before, right? For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? Now, I'm not here to harp on you or tell you the decisions to make or this kind of thing, but what I will say is this. One of the mistakes that often makes in the area of dating is that we have a tendency, because we want so bad for things to work out, because we love so much the idea of moving on to that next stage, is that we run through red flags. And one of those red flags is the fact that you and this person may or may not have much in common. And at your very core, the one thing you really, really need to have in common is the direction of your spiritual lives. Because if you are moving in one direction and they are not, and if there is this possibility of difficulty in that, then you have to ask yourself, what difficulties does it create down the road? And so I think the Bible gives this advice as not being particularly bad advice. Not because it's some evil, but because it will make your life harder. And I encourage you to take that seriously. If you are a Christian who is thinking about marriage and being intentional in your relationship about that, then you should be looking for someone whom you can have long-term agreement with. And I encourage you to consider that when you date. Be intentional about it. Secondly, I said we should be Christian about the way that we date. And this is difficult. Christian, meaning that we need to seek God from the beginning together. We need to spend time with our potential partners, praying with them. We need to set clear boundaries and avoid the temptations that often make our relationship about more than just getting to know each other. Yes, sex and temptation are good things, but they are meant to be done in a certain context. And that context, when it is done, is a beautiful gift given by God. But we should be Christian about the way we do things. We should set clear boundaries and agree on them. We should anticipate possible temptations. We should seek God together, pray with each other, and talk about our beliefs and what we see as the main things that we need to do in life. Another good verse for this, I know I'm bouncing forward back and forth between the Corinthians, but I'm going to go back to 1 Corinthians 6 now. If you go back to 1 Corinthians 6, you'll hear this in verse 18. Flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a person commits are outside the body, but whoever sins sexually sins against their own body. That is, it is something that is particularly difficult and particularly beguiling. And I offer you to consider, what does it mean for a Christian to date? Not just in the things you won't do, but also in the things you should do. To pray together, to seek God together, to talk about the future and your plans and what you think is right. What does Christian dating look like? I encourage you to think about that. Be intentional, be Christian. And the last one is honestly the hardest one for me to talk about, that is to be slow. And you want to know why that's hard for me to talk about? Jen and I met in October, November of, which one was it? October? November of 2014. And we got married in September of 2015, right? We were met and married in about a year, basically. Now, granted, we were almost 30 at that point, so we weren't exactly just out of school, but we did it quickly. And by the grace of God, it's worked out so far. I'm teasing. And so I hesitate to say, you know, be slow. Also, it's hard for me to talk about being slow because some people go on a whole different route with this. For some people these days, we'll be dating for 10, 15 years, you know what I mean? And never want to take that next step to fully committing. And neither of those is what I mean by be slow. What I mean is that when you have decided you need to do the right thing, but take your time, don't rush into it. Because you can live as a believer where you are. And sometimes getting to that next stage is not worth recklessness in getting there. Don't try to fill some hole in your heart or in your life or some loneliness and think you'll heal it by rushing into a bad relationship. You can be more lonely in a bad relationship than you can be in no relationship at all. It's true. This goes whether you are just coming out of school or whether you're divorced or widowed as well. Sometimes people rush headlong from one failure into something else, thinking it'll be different this time, without taking their time to think about it and to make sure that what is happening is right. So how do you date in a way that's intentional, Christian, and that takes the appropriate amount of time to do so? That's just some of the questions I lay out, because again, this is about how we do these little things the right way, so that it builds up to a life that greater honors God. Now, that was dating. I'm going to have to take up another subject here. Let's move on to singleness. And that's a hard one for me as well. I was single up until I was 29. And I didn't have a whole lot of dating history to go with that either. And it's a hard subject to talk about. But one of the things I want you to know is that in the Bible, singleness is far more honored than it is in society today. Singleness in the Bible is an actual role, and it's a role in which God can be honored. Notice that many of the people in the Bible were single. Hello, there was a guy named Jesus. Have you heard of him? Now, unless you read the Da Vinci Code, Jesus was single, okay? And I don't buy into the Da Vinci Code. Jesus was single. Who else was single? Who wrote this book in Corinthians? Paul. Paul was single. And traditionally, there have always been roles in Christianity for single people to exist, and not only exist, but add. And so traditionally, things like monks and nuns came along through Christian history, and they became an opportunity for people to truly devote themselves entirely to God, even to the point of foregoing marriage. And there was a place there for them, and they were honored for that. And I'm not saying we need to go back to that. What I'm saying is that we need to have a place for single people and to honor them as those who can serve God as much or more than the rest of us. Later, priests became celibate as well, and so there was this whole line of people who had the ability to serve God from where they were, whether married or not. In fact, Paul talks about this, and a lot of those things actually come out of this verse, I believe. If you were to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and jump down to verse 32, you'll see Paul honoring this possibility, which of course makes sense because he wasn't married. Verse 32, he says it this way, "I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of the world and how he can please his wife. And his interests are divided." Not a bad thing, just a natural thing. An unmarried woman or a virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. And again, either way is not bad. He says in verse 35, "I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undevoted devotion and undivided devotion to the Lord." What he's saying is there's a natural benefit to people who are single, to have a way to serve in the church, because their attention can be uniquely undivided. And as such, they deserve to be honored and given roles and purposes and things to do. And this is important. I think the single folks have an incredible opportunity to serve God. Our society tends to find them strange and struggles to find ways to include them. But it is becoming more normal, for better or worse, and we should be intentional. We should own it as the place in life we are, and instead of acting as though we are miserable, we should seek to serve God from the place that He has put us for as long as He puts us there. Am I saying that when you get a chance to date and marry and do it right, that you shouldn't do it? Absolutely not. What I'm saying is you may be in that position for a season. So how do you serve God best in that season? I'll tell you one thing, that a personal story. My grandma, when I was going through that period in my 20s, and I was single, and I really didn't know how all this was going to work out, and I remember sort of going on and just sort of talking about how much I didn't like the position I was in, and how I wished I, you know, had a girlfriend, or this or that going on, and how I just hated where I was. And my grandma said something. You know, it's funny, we talk about wisdom and older folks, and this time I think that really came true, because she looked at me and she said, "Tyler, I think you chose this." And I said, "No, I didn't." "Do you know how many have said no?" "No." "I think you chose this." I said, "What do you mean, Grandma? That's not true." "Well, you went to school and you devoted all your attention to studying so that you could go into the ministry. You had, what, 2 bachelor's and a master's degree. You devoted all this time and energy and focus into doing the right thing so that you could then come to a knowledge and have something to add to the world. And you weren't going to let anything distract you. And so here you are." It's not a bad thing. It's just where you are. Now, I'm not saying that I instantly felt better. But I began to understand that maybe there was a purpose to this season of my life. And maybe I needed to own my own decisions to a degree. Say, "You know what? I did choose to focus on other things for a season. I did choose to study and be prepared for whatever the next step was for me. And yes, it put me a little behind in some areas, but it also put me ahead in others. And you know what? I would probably make that decision again." And instead of feeling like the victim of a situation or a society or whatever it is, I should feel like someone who owned the decisions he made and is okay with them. Does that make sense? This is not a call for people to be lifelong bachelors or serial daters who are open to anything but responsibility. But it's a call to embrace the dignity of every status and find purpose and ownership in it, whether you are married or single or divorced or widowed. If you desire to marry again and the time is right, by all means do it. But don't make a mistake by rushing there. Serve God in whatever situation you have been put in, for whatever season you have been put there. So we've talked about dating. We've talked about singleness. What's the other category that probably presents most of the people in this room? Married. And obviously, in the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm probably not going to be able to tell you all you need to know about marriage. But I can touch upon a couple of quick things. I think that when it comes to marriage, we need to think about our mindset and our behavior. That is, how do we think about it and how do we do it? And one of the things I want to bring to mind in terms of how we think about it is I want to go to Ephesians chapter 5. This is a famous, again, kind of controversial passage. And yet, there are some key things in here. And the first thing I want you to know about your mindset is that you need to realize that in the process of marriage, you are, in a mysterious and consequential way, representing the love between Christ and the church. This is a mystery that Paul gives us that's outstanding. chapter 5, verse 31, "For this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh." That's actually a quote out of Genesis. But then he adds to it, "This is a profound mystery, that I am talking about Christ and the church." In other words, when you go about living your daily life, you are reflecting the love of God in heaven. And so when you love your wife, do you love her like Christ loves the church? Do you respect her? Do you give her input? Will you give your life for her? And not just your life in terms of your death, but your life in terms of the minutes and the seconds of every day. Will you serve her every breath you have? Will you choose to do the little things over and over and over again, consistently over time? Will you love her with every part of you the way Christ loves the church? That's marriage. And so we think about it in terms of honoring the mystery of Christ's love for us. And that becomes one way to understand marriage better, and honestly, a way to understand God better. One of the dangers I find is that because of the way our society is built and the way it functions, we have this preeminent sort of under-the-surface understanding that marriage, along with everything else, comes underneath my own personal fulfillment and happiness. Now, we may not say that out loud, but there's something about an individualistic society where all of us learn we're all on this trajectory to achieve our own sense of success or self-fulfillment or self-actualization or whatever you want to call it. And what happens is that we may think that we have committed to marriage forever, but we always come to it with this assumption that this is part of my self-actualization. And what happens is you get a little bit further down the road, and all of a sudden you realize that person also has goals in life and also has things that they want to do, and they may not be the same as yours. And because our society is the way it is, and because we choose these things, we naturally assume that that means that we are going separate ways. Except the problem is that that's not what you promised. And unfortunately, self-fulfillment is not the ultimate goal in faith. It is at least partially role fulfillment. Doing what God gave you to do to the best of your ability for as long as you can do it or as long as He calls you to do it. And that means accepting roles and boundaries that you chose to serve this person forever, even at the cost of your own self-fulfillment, believe it or not. And that's a danger we have to watch out for. And we could also go a little bit earlier in this chapter, and I think there's a key word we can use in this context. Going back to verse 21, it says this, and it says to both, by the way, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. What does that mean? Does it mean the wife should be submissive? Yes. Does it also mean that the husband should be submissive? Yes. It means that we submit to one another, whatever it is that could pull us apart. We submit to one another. We submit your own career and success stories in life. Submit them to your partner. You should submit your own friendships when need be, when those friendships keep you apart or cause jealousy or pain or hurt. You should submit control of your own body at times, mutually and by agreement. You should submit your cleaving to your parents when necessary. When they get in the way, commit only to one another. You should submit your own understanding of what normal means and how we do things around here, and submit them and lay them down for your partner. You should submit your preference for going to sleep when a conversation needs to be had about something important. You should submit your need to win every single argument, because it's actually better that you come out of it understanding each other more. You should submit all of these things about yourself. You should die to yourself, that your other partner, your husband or your wife may live. And most important, do all those little things. This is about giving everything. It's about giving years, not seconds, life and not death, constant service over singular sacrifice. In so doing, you will begin to fully understand what it means to be a Christian. And your process of being single or married or widowed, you will become more like Christ. So instead of rushing out of whatever status you are in, hang in it long enough to learn something from it. Don't rush away. And let God use wherever you are to teach you how to follow Him. Amen? Let's get a couple application points, then we'll move on. I always try to include something to take with us. Number one, ask God how you can serve Him from your current place in life. Sometimes we have a tendency to always move on to the next step. I do it too, okay? It's just the way we are. We all think about that next step instead of thinking where we are, how can we be used by God? How can God teach us and how can we serve Him? And so whether you are married or unmarried or whether you're at this job instead of another job or whatever it is that you tend to jump ahead, just jump back for a second. How can I serve God from where I am? I heard a sermon once, I think it was titled, Be a Blessing Where You're Planted. You've been planted there. Grow. Maybe someday you'll change, but grow where you are. Number two, embrace the choices you have made as part of God's plan for your life. In other words, it's easy to make regrets or wonder, well, I wish I hadn't made that decision, or now I'm looking back on it, maybe I shouldn't have done this. But instead of complaining about being a victim of where you are, own the choices you made that brought you to where you are. This is my conversation with my grandma, right? I made the choices to work hard in school and to focus on other things. So own that. And don't be disappointed or feel like a victim. Just say, this is where I am, and that's okay. And you know what? God can use me exactly where I am. Embrace the choices that you have made as part of God's plan and figure out what you can learn from it. So instead of rushing to another place, stay where you are and love God totally. And that is all that is actually required of you, believe it or not. You're not required to get married and have kids and grandkids. You're required to be where you are and love God totally. And that's it. Keep it simple. If you will, let's bow our heads and pray. God in heaven, I know that this is a hard subject, and I hope that I've done a little bit of justice to it, and I hope that you can use this and work in people's hearts. I know this is a big topic, and I can't speak to everyone's individual situations, but God, I feel that it's so important that we understand that part of being a Christian is accepting where we are, and then using where we are to learn and grow and serve. And I pray that in all of our frustrations and all of our anxiety and all of our desire to go to some other step or some other place, that we can all slow down for a minute and know that you are working now, not just then. And because of that, we can serve you right where we are. I pray, God, that each of us will do our best to allow you to make the decisions and allow you to put us where you want us and to be joyful and happy to live in that place. God, as you see fit, may we find wonderful, fulfilling relationships because, God, you are good and grant that to so many of us. But I pray that we wait for your timing and we allow you to be the first and foremost and to lead the way. It's in your Son's precious name that we pray. Amen.